Welcome to the Internet Advisor Podcast. I'm your host and producer, Foster Brown. Along with my co-host, Gary Baker, and our team of experts, we've been helping people like you since 1998 with your computer problems, introducing you to valuable resources, and promoting tech enterprise throughout Michigan. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour podcast recorded every week at the studios of historic WJR Radio in Detroit. Both hours of the show are available each week on this podcast and are streamed to our affiliates across the state of Michigan. We're also proud to be part of Detroit's newest and fastest-growing podcast network, PodcastDetroit.com. And now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome aboard the Internet Advisor. Hi, I'm Foster Brown, the co-host of the program and the producer, and we've got a great program lined up today. We're going to delve into the mysteries of AI and find out more about that and how it's really part of the reality of our lives already. And in addition to that, we're going to be hunting for meteorites. That's right, all that coming up this hour. And next hour, don't forget, you get to call in with your questions and we'll get some answers for you. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. I should say, welcome aboard as we're starting our program here. Foster Brown with you, and in just a minute, we're going to get a hookup with Gary Baker, I believe, is on the line already from Fort Lauderdale. Am I right, Gary?
I am.
Hey, good. Good to have you online with us down there with a shared adventure. Gary is joining us from the docks down there, and we're glad to have you back with us this week, Gary.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks.
Also with us, Ed Rudell. Ed, good to have you on board.
Always great to be here. Great chauffeur. And yes, looking forward to the second hour to answer our listener questions.
That's right. And to help with that as well, we have Mr. Caston Thomas. Good to have you back.
Oh, it's always great to be here. And I'm looking forward to the first hour because we've got two great guests.
Yes, we do. We are lining them up. As a matter of fact, one of our guests is in studio here. And we could just kind of maybe preempt things by saying hello to her. Her name is Sheen Xiao. And welcome to the Internet Advisor, Sheen. Good to have you with us.
Oh, thank you. Glad to be here.
Sheen is, her title is High Tech Product Management and Marketing Executive for Early and Growth Stage Companies. It's a mouthful.
Yeah, mouthful.
And the company is called Einstein. It's clever spelling of that, by the way.
Thank you. We thought so, too.
A-I-N-S-T-E-I-N. So it's harkening back to Einstein, but also recognizing AI as a critical part of your company, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, we develop very, very smart sensing solutions for not only for cars, but also for drones, UAVs. So we're very AI focused.
Okay, you know, one of the things I want to do before we get too far into this, and Ed has been good at catching me on this and casting as well. What would you give me a definition of what AI is, or artificial intelligence?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a very good question. I think if you ask different person, there are different definitions. In my mind, I always wanted to explain things in a very easy, like common people way. So artificial intelligence essentially is using machine, try to mimic human, like the way human sees. And We try to make machine to be able to see just like human as well, and thinking like a human. So I would say artificial intelligence, a lot of it's just that.
It's a challenge, a real challenge.
Mm-hmm,
I understand that the man who started Einstein was a professor at Kansas.
Yes.
Is it KU? Kansas State University?
Yeah, University of Kansas.
University of Kansas,
right.
Pardon me. I know.
Yeah.
The basketball team.
Yeah. UK. Yeah, he was a professor there for a number of years. He had been brought in from China because of his skill in this area.
Yeah.
And then he decided to go out and
use those skills to create his own company.
Right. Yeah. So before I joined the company, I didn't know this myself. Actually, University of Kansas is one of the top radar knowledge center in the U.S. So that's actually one of the reasons the company is based in Lawrence, Kansas.
Yes.
Yeah, that's where the talents are, and that's why we're based in Kansas.
It's fascinating, guys. I was told that there are three major development centers for AI in the United States. One is MIT, and then on the West Coast, it's
Caltech.
Yeah. Then Kansas.
Right, for especially around radar technologies, we are certainly one of the top three.
That's fascinating. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the company developed out of that, right?
Yes.
You know, and that's what's strange is when you said that that a lot of the vision technology for the automobiles, that this company is dealing with radar as opposed to most companies you're hearing about LIDAR and other types of vision, well, you're focusing on radar.
Right, right.
Okay.
A key reason for that is radar technology has developed to the point where it become very small. So it's very portable and fit into cars or drones very easily. And when I talk to other people, when they talk about radar, they always thought about, oh, it's a weather radar?
Yes, exactly.
That's gigantic disc.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I think of bats. So I'm wondering if we're going to be driving down with radar in the cars and have a flock of bats following us.
Well, that's different. That's echolocation. Now, come on.
Okay, I stand corrected.
So that's why... radar, another huge advantage is it actually cut through really poor weathers like snow, rain, foggy conditions. And if you look at several technologies that everybody's looking at for self-driving autonomous cars, essentially you are looking at three or four, right?
Okay, what are the three again?
Yeah, so camera.
Okay.
LIDAR. Mm-hmm. That's what you probably heard most.
Yeah, which is laser-based. Right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and optical-based. And then radar.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, those are top three that are really popular. And I would say must-have for self-driving cars. And for radar, is the importance really comes in poor weather conditions.
Yes.
Which makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that I noticed with Einstein, your company, is that it is already involved in a number of fields. And maybe we can talk about that after the break as we get going in our conversation here.
Right.
Let me just remind the folks who are tuning in right now that we're talking with our guest, Xin Qiao. She is with Einstein, which is a company that is based, actually, the headquarters is here in Kansas, Lawrence, Kansas.
Yep.
And you have offices in Beijing, which is, I'm going to talk about that a little bit when we come back. But you're already very much involved in a number of other fields, such as the drones.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I saw security as well.
Correct.
Home security. Okay. We'll talk a little bit more about it as we come back with that. There's a lot to talk about today as we're talking about this is technology that's already here, part of our lives. And as a matter of fact, you might not have been aware of it, but it's been helping you in lane changes and in braking and all sorts of stuff. And this is technology that's already at work for us. We're going to continue talking about that in just a minute with Xin Qiao, who is with Einstein. We'll be back with the Internet Advisor in just a moment. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. Gary Baker with us way down in Florida, in Fort Lauderdale. Gary, good to have you along for the ride as well.
Well, I'm happy to be here. I've got my radar going here on the boat, but since I'm sitting here in the marina, it's not all that helpful.
It's not that helpful. Yeah, Gary, you were, I know, have been to the charity preview for many, many years. And did you miss it this year, not being able to come up for the gala?
You know, I did. There's lots of things I'm missing out on. Obviously, I'm I'm replacing them with things that happen down here, like the boat shows that I don't get to go to when I'm up there. But you miss the gala, and I missed the auto show this year. And so, I've been living vicariously through the online experience, like most of us do, but I can't actually get there. So.
Absolutely. And Sheen Shao is with us from Einstein, and we're talking about AI or artificial intelligence is one of the ways of putting it. There are so many questions that I have for you about the company itself, but Gary, I wanted to make sure that you had a chance to ask a question as well, if you do.
Well, I noticed that that you weren't really focused on the marine market, and radar's been a big part of the marine market for years.
Mm-hmm.
Any thoughts about getting in there, or is that just too mundane now to address it?
It sounds like I'm speaking to my investors. So that's a very good question, because that's one of the reasons our founders decided to leave academic and coming to a business world, because there are so many applications that radar can apply to. Like you mentioned, marine certainly is one of the areas that radar was very useful, because it goes extremely far distance and again cutting through rough environment and works perfect in dark environment. Then as a company, we need to really focus on what we do best, which is high performance radar in very compact form factors.
Mm-hmm.
And for marine applications, to have that long distance, you need to be there are moving parts using different technology, and also form factor is much bigger. And
yes, I would imagine. Right.
Yeah, so that's one of the reasons we decided to focus on very compact and high performance radars instead of playing in different field.
I gotcha.
Also, I think if our radar in marine applications, we don't have to be accurate to 3 meters or even 3 feet.
Right.
Boy, if you get that close to another boat, you're in real trouble.
Yeah, you don't need radar.
You need the Coast Guard at that point.
That's right.
Okay, so I have a question. So you have artificial intelligence.
Yes.
And you're also talking about radar. How are the two used for in our driving experiences, mm-hmm. to protect us,
right.
You know, how do the two fit together? I mean, I have an idea, but I'd like to hear your definition of.
Right. Yeah. Fantastic questions. So artificial intelligence, again, you can interpret it in so many different ways. And in my mind, is you already seeing some of the artificial AIs in cars right now and associated with radar. For example, I think a lot of us have cars with cruise control.
Oh, yeah.
Essentially is using either radar or camera as a way to monitor the distance between your car and the cars in front of you or surround you, and keep that healthy distance, and the computer within the car actually thinking and decide if that distance is too close for you.
Mm-hmm.
And for your safety reasons, and either brake for you or give you alarm, kind of reminds you got to keep a healthy distance.
One of the other things I experienced recently, I was driving a late model, I think a 2018 Acadia,
mm-hmm.
one of the big ones. I had rented it at one point. And I know that had all sorts of bells and whistles on it.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly I heard something going beep, beep, and it was to remind me that there was somebody in my blind spot.
Yeah.
And there's all sorts of ways in which mm-hmm. we have this technology
that's
at work for us mm-hmm. in the cars. But one of the key things, it sounds like, Sheen, mm-hmm. is that it has to be small enough and low powered enough that it can work well with what's there and not have to be a big bulky piece that you add to
it. One of the other things when we're going to electrified vehicles is, you know, we want to get as many miles as we can driving the car. 250 would be great.
Precisely.
But if you're using all that for all the different computers on the vehicle, you're going to reduce the how far you can drive with these vehicles. So smaller is better. And I'm sure that's one of the things your company is focusing on.
Right. Yeah. Very low power consumption. That's a hard requirement for our sensors. And the other thing is... has to be small so that it fit into the car. Nowadays, I don't know about you guys, but I really care about how my car looks. That's kind of part of my appearance.
Sure. Yeah, right.
I don't want a bulky or some kind of sensor has to be sit on top of my car.
Yeah, right.
Right? So it has to be hidden somewhere in hot light or corner somewhere. You just... cannot be seen.
Right.
That's the requirement.
Right.
That's why our sensor are designed very small.
Yep.
So that it can be easily put anywhere around the car.
Well, the other thing with radar that I would speculate is as opposed to LIDAR and with the artificial intelligence, you're driving down the road and you have a snow squall that throws in front of you, that blows in front of you. It's like a wall. We've all experienced it.
Yeah.
One type of radar or LIDAR might interpret that one way and apply the brakes. And then your anti-skid would kick in, where a radar would actually penetrate that and be able to tell the density of it and say that's nothing that we should brake at. Mm-hmm. And that's where also I would speculate that the artificial intelligence comes in as well.
Okay.
Is comparing these.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You get a salesman here, I think.
Yeah.
There you go.
You are hired.
But it would also be able to detect those devices and those obstructions in the driving range through the snow or what have you as well.
Yes.
And you mentioned this before, Sheen. A lot of this is looking forward to self-driving cars.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big thing now with Planet M and the whole complex that we have out in Ypsilanti.
Yeah, fantastic point. So the other actually more important looking forward is what AI can do around sensors. And what we really focus on is 3D radar and AI radars. And that's the technology actually can bring a performance very similar to LIDAR, but can penetrate snow, weather, and poor visibility conditions.
Wow.
So that's actually what we really focus on. And we've seen very significant performance and very promising.
That's exciting to hear. I also noticed that you're involved in the drone business. Einstein is involved in drones. Are those military drones? On the site, there's a picture of some of the military drones.
Right. We heavily invest in commercial drones. And so it's kind of different from the typical DJI drone you saw in Best Buy or anywhere. But we focus more on business-oriented commercial drones.
Right.
And those drones tend to be a key asset for companies, much more expensive. That's why our technologies can help those drones to not hit the wall.
Right.
And be able to fly autonomously.
Wow.
Flying out of sight. So that's what we can do for them.
That word autonomously sounds like it's going to be a really key part of looking forward to the future.
Absolutely.
I'm just curious about one thing. I noticed that your headquarters are in Kansas, right?
Yes, that is correct.
And what I find interesting about that is that essentially this is a Chinese company, but you've chosen to make your base here in Kansas rather than in Beijing, where you have an office.
Mm-hmm. Right. It definitely is a... Chinese invested company. It is a U.S.-based, U.S. company, but with investors coming from China, different part. It is an interesting phenomenon, I would say, because when I came to the States 20 years ago, and it's you saw U.S. companies having offices in China. And nowadays, you have Chinese investing company headquartered in U.S. So it just, boy, what the last 10, 15 years has changed us.
Oh, Incredibly so. Shane, I want to thank you very much for being with us. Shane Chow, you've had a busy week, haven't you?
Absolutely.
Time for you to relax a little bit, because this last week with Automobility has been a big one for you, with, you know, looking for customers.
Mm-hmm, right.
And dealing with them.
Yeah, it has been a really productive week.
Good.
Yeah. We saw a lot of interest about our technologies and how different OEMs and suppliers can incorporate our technologies in their modules and what they provide. So it has been very exciting. And there are certain customers we expected to speak to.
Yeah.
But also there are certain customers that kind of surprised us.
That's
nice. Great. That's great.
Those are nice phrases.
And you know, from my standpoint, the internet gives us the ability to collaborate with the automotive industry here in Detroit.
Right.
And, you know, I'd love to have Sheen and Jason, our guests from last week from
Vectorform,
room for an hour and watch that discussion.
We'll have to see if we can arrange that. Sheen, thank you so much for being with us. Sheen Chiao from Einstein. And we're going to take a pause in just a moment. When we come back, we're going to talk with a meteor hunter, Daryl Pitt. Well, some of you may have had the experience that Ed Rudell had this week where suddenly there was a bright light in the sky and a boom. Ed, talk about your experience for just a second before we bring our guest on board.
I was in bed. It's about 8 o'clock, maybe a little after, and I'm reading. And my wife's taking the dog outside. She comes in and she goes, "Did you see that big flash in the sky?" And I'm like, she goes, "It's thundering and lightning outside." I said, "Well, no, I saw the flash and then I heard the rumble." And then the rumble was, made the window shake a little bit. And I live way up in Ortonville. And she goes, "The dog was going nuts. I couldn't, he was running around in circles, pulling me off the leash." And it wasn't until the next morning that we found out what it was. And a lot of my friends had a similar description of the animals going nuts, the what appeared to be lightning, and then the rumble.
All right. Well, the guy who is here with us on the phone right now is Daryl Pitt. And Daryl, welcome to the Internet Advisor. He's a curator of the Makovich Collection of Meteorites in New York City and also a consultant to Christie's Auction House. Daryl has been out hunting for pieces of that meteorite, and in particular, he put out a bounty.
Ooh, I like it.
Of $20,000 for anyone who would come up with a 1 kilo piece of meteorite. And so that's what he has been out in the field with. We've seen little pieces of it. If you go to internetadvisor.net, we have pictures of somebody there with one on the hand. Daryl, are you with us on the line?
I am. Hi.
Oh, excellent.
All right. Finding you has been almost as hard as finding the meteorites, but we got you.
Well, I'm very happy to be here.
I'm glad to have caught you. Okay, Daryl, you came in all the way from New York, but you're from the Detroit area, I understand, right?
I grew up in Southfield.
All right. So you're back in this area, along with a lot of other people, professional and amateurs, looking for pieces of that meteorite that landed.
That's correct.
So what have you found so far?
I have not found anything. One of my dear friends, Robert Ward, found the first piece, and he's found three pieces. Another buddy, Larry Atkins, who's also from Michigan, a professional meteorite hunter, he's found a couple of pieces. Meteorites are really difficult to find, and it's really challenging now. There are a lot of specimens that are out there, for sure. But there are only about 12 specimens that have been found. The total weight is, that's been reported, the total weight is about 500 grams. That's about it. And almost all of them, with the exception of one, have been found on frozen lakes, on Strawberry Lake, Zuki Lake, and Bass Lake. And if it were another time of year, none of those would be found. So that's why these things are so valuable. Right now, the valuable, the value of these meteorites, I would say, is about $50, $60 a gram, which is many times its weight in gold.
Wow. That is...
Okay, so this is by Hamburg, Michigan. Okay.
Correct.
And I have my brother lives out there, so I'm sort of familiar with the area. That's like at...
him look.
23 and like 8 Mile area, but a little bit west of that. And so where did the actual explosion happen above? And then so how far did it take for it until it impacted the Earth, the fragments? So any idea of about that?
Yeah, I mean, yes, it is known. This was a very, very steep trajectory that came into our atmosphere. And because it was so steep, that's why there was such a big explosion that mimicked what would be a seismic earthquake event.
Wow.
So it entered the atmosphere not so far from here. I'm guessing now, I'm going to say less than 100 miles, maybe 50, 60 miles.
Mm-hmm.
And it just came in on a very, very steep angle. And there were multiple detonations. And there are a lot of specimens out there waiting to be found.
Well, when you say there were multiple detonations, is that because it had broken up in the atmosphere?
That's correct.
Oh,
this thing's traveling at a cosmic velocity before it enters our atmosphere of about 10 miles a second. And hitting the outer atmosphere is like hitting a brick wall. And a lot of stone meteorites in particular, they can't withstand that pressure. And then, and they'll explode. And they'll explode again and explode again. Based on a couple of reasons. Again, the angle of entry into the atmosphere and also what it's made of. It depends on the kind of meteorite that it is, but we now know that. It's a typical kind of stony meteorite. But okay. Even typical, it's incredibly exotic. As I've mentioned before, if you take every single meteorite known to exist, they still weigh less collectively than the world's annual output of gold.
Whoa.
And if you have trouble finding one here, by coincidence, Christie's is having their annual deep impact meteorite auction of really highly pedigreed, beautiful, beautiful meteorite specimens. If you go to Christie's.com and go to deep impact, I think they'll be posting it next week. That's an online sale.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I wanted to mention, too, that is really important. Local folks here, I mean, I enjoyed a lot walking on the lakes and hearing the funny noises and the cracks and the woo-woo-woo-woo-woo sound of household layers of ice moving around. But there was one fellow who said to me, I'm watching on my picture window. It's like watching NASCAR. I'm just waiting for it to happen. He thinks it's crazy for so many people to be on the lakes now, especially with it warming up. And so please, 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 folks, be careful. It's not worth it. It's still just a rock. An extraterrestrial rock, but just a rock.
Yeah, that's true.
I hear you. That's really good. Daryl Pitt is our guest here, and he's the curator of the Makovich Collection of Meteorites in New York City, and also a consultant to Christie's Auction House, as you heard. So I had seen in the news your friend, was it Larry Ward?
Robert Ward and Larry Atkins.
Both. Yeah, both of them. And they were pictured with, as a matter of fact, we have a picture of one of them on our website, as a matter of fact, with one of the smaller pieces in his hand there. That's about it so far, right? And how do you folks know where these things are? I mean, he went to it, boom, so quickly.
All right, well, the great thing about this particular event was it was picked up by Doppler radar. And so once you get Doppler returns, that really helps you locate the suspected strewn fields. Then you find one, and you find another, and then you begin to radiate out from those areas, and the strewn field begins to define itself. And that's how it's done. Now, one thing, it's challenging now, it's because of the snow and the slush, but after it rains here, people should be out looking again because they'll be really easy to identify on the farm fields, you know, off the sides of the road.
Oh, I got you. Okay.
Parking lots and that kind of stuff.
So but how do you identify them?
Right. Yeah, go ahead.
What do they look like? What am I looking for?
These look like black rocks. They don't look like basaltic chunks of iron. People really confuse meteorites looking like that. Only a small, small percentage do. But the best thing to do is go to and there's several of them that exist, the meteorite identification websites. But in this case, a freshly fallen stone meteorite has a black crust, which is called the fusion crust. And that's as a result of its fiery descent as it penetrates the atmosphere. It's literally getting toasted and burnt, and material is ablating off, and it's getting smaller and smaller until it free falls and cools off a bit and lands on Earth.
So it's almost like a briquette, you know, from your...
A little bit. There's a more exotic kind of meteorite called the carbonaceous chondrite that it mimics a briquette exactly. Okay. And this is not that.
Okay.
It's rounded. If it's a larger piece, it'll have these little indentations called regmaglyphs. It's an aerodynamic feature of also burning through the atmosphere. But so far, we've only seen one specimen with those kinds of indentations. Most are just rounded, very, very black rocks. And if you look closely, you might see a little bit of bubbling, again, from the boiling that was taking place in the low-pressure area as it was coming down through the atmosphere.
Well, that's fascinating. What are the odds of anybody coming up with a 2.2-pound or 1 kilo?
It's challenging. It's out there. It's definitely out
really?
There. And the odds are better than winning Powerball, for sure. You know, you have to go and look. It's your extraterrestrial lottery ticket. It's there. as I indicated, I'm happy to pay $20,000 to anyone who wants to sell the first 1 kilo specimen. And frankly, I'll buy any specimen that's found. Right now, there's just been very little material found.
Yeah.
So it is challenging, but that's going to change once this ice melts. And then it's a really nice area to walk around. And we have, just a beautiful day walking around golf courses and, you know, school and football fields.
Daryl, one of the things that you point out in your news release and we have seen before is, folks, please get permission.
Very important.
Get permission from the landowner before you go traipsing off.
Yeah, you can't. There's no license like, oh, but I'm here looking for a meteorite. That's why I'm on your private property. Technically, by the way, that meteorite is owned by the person whose property it falls on. And when it falls on government-owned property, federal property, it goes to the Smithsonian. But most of this has fallen on private property, is my guess.
Yep. How long are you planning on sticking around, Daryl?
You know, I wish I could stick around longer. I have to leave tomorrow, but I will be back. That's a promise.
Like Arnold Schwarzenegger, I will be back.
Hey, Daryl, you know, I was curious, Daryl, about the fact that it was Doppler radar that picked up this Michigan event. I would have thought that you could have been tracking that meteorite as it was coming toward the Earth. We didn't know about it ahead of time?
No, that doesn't happen. It's been only documented to occur on one occasion where there was 24-hour notice of a small asteroid coming in that broke up over Sudan and pieces were recovered. That's why there are scientists all over the world that are paying close attention to near-Earth asteroids, because we need some warning. One day is going to be, there'll be a large impact, and it's going to be a rough day.
Daryl, we've run out of time here, but I will have to have you back to talk some more about this. Thanks for being with us, Daryl.
I would enjoy it. Thank you, everyone.
All right, take care. That's Daryl Pitt. Coming up next, Mike Brennan and another guest, Rick Becker's with him to talk about the recent Automobile D at the North American International Auto Show, which is opening up for you, the public. Welcome back. It's the time in our program when we normally welcome Mr. Mike Brennan, who is with us right now. Mike, it's good to have you with us.
Thanks, Foster. I'll tell you, I was listening to that last segment, and it was out of this world.
Very much so. We had a really good question from Sheen Chow, who was with us in studio. That was, you know, whether these things are radioactive, and I'm going to guess that they aren't, if we're all picking them up like they are right now.
I'd be carrying my Geiger counter.
I was certainly, yes.
Well, I mean, I'm certain they have a certain amount of, what is it, iridium, which is what they use to trace when the dinosaur extinction. There's a whole layer of it. So there is a minimal background radiation of iridium. I wouldn't think, but, you know, that I'm just pulling that out, you know.
Yeah, we don't really don't
what
know.
Do I know?
Anyway, Mike, it's good to have you with us here.
Thanks, Foster.
Mike is the editor of the MI Tech News, which is a great source of information on both technology and entrepreneurship in the state of Michigan. It's absolutely free. You get it delivered twice a week to your house, Wednesdays and Fridays. And you also have somebody with you, Mr. Rick Beckers, who is the president of Cloud Tech One. Rick, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Thank you, Foster.
Good to have you on with us. Guys, here's what we're going to talk about. We normally talk about headlines that have come up this week in MI Tech News. But, Mike, you spent some time with the auto...
Mobility,
which was downstairs at Kobo all this week. And that's where our guest Sheen Chow was at with Einstein and a lot of other of those suppliers. What was your experience like down there? I wanted to get some reporting because you were there for quite a while.
Well, since we're live, let me also make a small correction. It's only there until tomorrow night. It disappears on Monday like Brigadoon.
So, okay.
If anybody in the listening audience wants to see the future of Michigan, what's the future of the Michigan auto industry, you need to go to the basement. And that's where it is down there. There's 57 companies on exhibit down there, and they got everything from Swedish self-driving semis to these army vehicles that are all electrified and use their transmission to generate electricity and no fuel, so everything's down there.
Wow. In terms of, you mentioned some of those really neat things. Was there anything in particular that struck you as kind of like a really key piece for the future?
Well, actually, the award winner, Carmera, they provide real-time 3D mapping and navigation that goes into autonomous vehicles. They were named both Best of Show and Startup of the Year by Governor Snyder. Now, the one thing that you're going to read further on down the story to find out is these guys are also working with the University of Michigan's M-City and Michigan State University's facilities there. So they're already working with Michigan companies, and this company is precisely the type of company that the governor wants to encourage more of this state, because it's doing really innovative, cutting-edge stuff in autonomous vehicles, which is the big thing that the state's got its economic policies all hitched to now, right?
Right, so. Exactly. Very important part of it. Rick Beckers is with us as well. And Rick, I know that your company is called CloudTech One. You're very much involved in the exploring this whole area of the Internet of Things. How does that relate to what Mike is talking about that he saw down there?
Well, those are all examples of Internet of Things.
There you go.
And my involvement in it is through my company, as an ambassador out of Automation Alley, and as an editorial advisor for some of the national technology media, where I've gone to multiple shows across the country throughout the last few years and collected experiences that were impressive, but at the end of the day, I even took Mike to one in Chicago. At the end of the day, we looked at each other and said, Michigan really is the future hotbed in terms of all things IoT, at least an automotive perspective, and a whole lot of other things. And so we're doing something about that coming up here.
That's right. And matter of fact, Mike, why don't you talk about that? In April, you've got a conference coming up that you're hosting.
Yeah, well, Rick and I together are hosting that. That's the IoT Tech Connect Conference. He named it, actually came up with that. And it's going to be on April 4th at the Troy Marriott. And my area is I'm grabbing or twisting arms of all the people I typically work with, trying to get them involved in this. Most of them are pretty interested. And so it'll be a really good showcase for what we're doing in Michigan IoT. That's really the big differentiator.
Right, right. And I would imagine, as you mentioned this, Rick, exactly, that the things that we've talked about, the Internet of Things and Einstein, the company that we were talking about before, really is about connecting all of those things together. Xin Xiao, who's been with us, one of the things I noticed with Einstein was that you have sensors that not only are servicing radar, but also collecting information, data from other sensors around it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's actually the future of sensing, is sensing sensor fusion. And for what we do, we're very focused on radar and camera sensor fusion at a really lower level.
Mm-hmm.
And that can really get us to a 3D image and still penetrate through all that environmental elements,
What impressed me about that is you're not selling like one little device that goes into the machine, mm-hmm. but you're offering a technology that actually reads the data from all the stuff. And Rick, that is where I see this Internet of Things is the ability not to be just another player in that field, but to be able to gather the data from that field and make some sense of it wherever you happen to be.
True. And, to be really simplistic about IoT, it's three-pronged. It's the sensor technology, such as she's explained, which can be a single device. It can be what's known as fog, which is multiple devices collecting and holding the data before it goes up. And then in the middle, the second prong is the connectivity piece, whether it's cellular, satellite, or what have you. And then lastly, you've got to do something with it, business analytics and the type of thing that allows you to benefit from the data that's been collected and then use it back for positive purposes.
Right, and that's are those the Sheena, am I right that that's the nature of the algorithms that have been developed, for instance, by your company as one example?
Absolutely, yeah. Algorithms and signal processings, and that's where the core of artificial intelligence coming from.
That's it. Yeah, that's in the background that does that analytic kind of thing. So, Mike, this is you're gathering people for this. Conference is coming up in April. How's it going so far?
Well, Planet M, which is the MEDC's mobility initiative, is now the title sponsor.
Ah, excellent.
I'm really hoping the governor will be involved as a keynote. He's an old friend of mine. This is his last year in office, and this whole thing is one of those. His, he really is into all this, so I'm hoping he'll join us. And then we've got Warner Norcross and Judd as our VIP reception sponsor. We've got the Michigan Manufacturing Technology Center sponsor in the speaker room and the area for the press. And then we've got half a dozen other companies that are almost ready to sign up. And then we get a lot of affiliate sponsors, Automation Alley, Tech 248, Tech Town, Inforum, everybody,
It's a party. What can we
including, if I may,
sure,
Internet Advisor.
Ah, that's right. Right.
Foster,
we're going to be.
Thank you very much for your help and participation.
Absolutely. We're looking forward to that. Matter of fact, maybe we can see if we can get Gary off the boat and back up here for that. I don't know, Gary. This is a.
It'll be April, Gary, so it'll be warm.
Right. Boy, I'd certainly like to be there, so I'll try to make that happen.
All right. That's great.
It's going to be a good event.
It's going to be a great event up there. Mike, by the way, just a reminder for folks out there, MI Tech News regularly is bringing you headlines about things that are going on. For instance, Carmera winning this autonomous driving best of show at Planet NM Awards. The other thing was you have analysis of things like Amazon rejecting Michigan. Oh, that hurts.
Yeah, mostly because we didn't have the talent resources they were looking for, which is another big thing that the governor and many other folks are pushing is we can't be left behind in this, folks. We're going to be, a third-rate state, so.
Yep. Really important. And the last one there, one of the other headlines I saw was interesting, was worldwide PC shipments have been declined in the fourth quarter. That's a 13th quarterly decline in a row for PCs. And what's interesting is the movement towards our smartphones really being those portable computers that we have in our pockets.
The United States did very poorly. The rest of the world, okay, but in all, 2% down for the quarter and 13 consecutive quarters. I'm not saying it's the end of the PC, but it's pretty close.
Yep. And it's morphing more into, I think, the smartphones as well. Rick Beckers, thank you so much for being with us. And the best to you and to Cloud Tech One out there in Rochester. Again, Mike, thank you so much for being with us. That's mitechnews.com. You can sign up there and get yourself a subscription. Good to talk with you, Mike. Folks,
we're going
to take a quick break. When we come back on the other side, it's your turn to ask your questions at 800-859-0957. That's 800-859-0957. Give us a call. And remember, our mantra is the only dumb question is the one you don't ask. And we're going to have lots of people standing by to help you with that.
You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. To see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage, theinternetadvisor.net. You'll discover past podcasts, our free toolkit with software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, and many other resources. You'll also find links to mitechnews.com, our co-sponsored weekly tech and entrepreneur newsletter, edited by Mike Brennan. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact button on the homepage and send us an email with the details. And don't forget to look for us on Facebook and Twitter and at Detroit's newest podcast network, PodcastDetroit.com. Now let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor.
And indeed, this is the time that we want you to get in touch with your hosts here. The number is 800-859-0957. You may not be used to a program being available to you like this at 6 o'clock in the evening on a Saturday, but here it is. And if you've got questions about your computer, about your tablet, about your phone, we got people standing by at 800-859-0957. Give us a call. We're delighted to be available for you right now. And this, as we've often said in the past, is your hour, the hour that you ask questions. And we get a chance to bat them around between our experts in studio here. And that's going to include Cal Carson. Not Cal Carson. He's the one person who isn't here. Sorry, Kasten. Kasten Thomas, who is here in studio with us.
I'll answer to just about anything.
Yeah. And Ed Rudell as well. And Gary Baker, who is with us from down in Fort Lauderdale, standing by. We're ready to tackle the questions you may have about, a fussy printer or... a Wi-Fi that is no longer working suddenly. My granddaughter called the other day, and her Windows 10 machine had suddenly just gone blank and had frozen and was not allowing her to even get to the sign-on page. And Ed, I don't have a real catalog of things to offer her, so I was completely in the dark about what to do. But for some reason, I said, Control-Alt-Delete. And all of a sudden, my granddaughter said, that's it. That worked. I don't know why, but that was like a magic formula with Windows. Does that still work that way, Ed?
It does for the login prompt, but usually not when you get a blank screen like that. That's unusual.
Yeah, it was. But the funny thing about it was,
you're her hero.
I was her hero, and I didn't know what I had done.
Well, Foster, I'm just proud of you that when you found out the computer was frozen, you didn't tell her to put it in the oven for a few minutes.
No.
Well, we did have a listener send us a question last week, and he said, I had a friend that was listening to your show last week, and he was. He said that you guys are talking Linux now. You guys are Linux experts.
Oh.
And I'm like, no. We're not Linux experts. What I was talking about last week was sometime we had a gentleman that called. He had Windows XP with no security.
Yes.
And
yes.
He was complaining that his internet speed was so slow.
Right.
And Kasten and I were ready to basically agree with him because the internet providers are throttling down and sharing, you know. But when we found out he had XP, well, that explains why your internet experience is so slow. So I had brought up that sometimes if you install Linux Mint on an old computer or a form of Linux like Ubuntu, then sometimes that'll, you know, putting an alternate operating system on there will just bring it back to life.
Right.
And the
Linux systems are free, right? Am I right?
Not always.
Oh, not always. Oh, okay.
No, not always. But you could forget free distributions very easily.
Oh,
so,
okay.
I mean, once you back up the data, you could back up all the data, and then you can install Linux to replace Windows, or you can install it so that you can boot up your computer and it'll prompt you. Do you wish to bring up Linux Mint, or do you wish to bring up your old...
The alternate boot.
Yeah, your XP. And that way you can make the decision which one actually is performing better.
But one of the things that you brought... I'm sorry, go ahead, Gary.
Oh, I was just going to say, Linux is so lightweight. That really helps it on older computers. Now, it doesn't connect to every new application out there, and some applications won't work with Linux that are designed specifically for Windows, and especially some of the Windows 10. It's a great way to get a little more life out of an old computer. Don't you agree, Ed?
Yeah. Oh, especially if you're just powering up the computer and then launching your internet browser and going on to the internet and going on to Facebook and your email. Yes, it's perfect for that. And if you want to, or it'll attach to your home printers and you can get a free version of word processing.
Yeah. Yeah. But one of the things you should not do, Kasten, am I right, is just kind of plod along merrily with XP because you are naked in the wind.
It's like going out in deer season with a target on your chest.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, Lord. Yeah. And antlers to boot because it's not supported in any way. and by Microsoft anymore. And
it is for a price.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, you can still get XP supported. Of course you can. Microsoft will more than like, you know, but we have to remember our ATM infrastructure is based on a hardened That's version true. Of Windows XP, and a lot of them are being updated, of course, because they had to because of the many debit cards are going now with the chip as well.
Yeah.
So they had to be updated, so they're updating the ATMs with a newer version of an OS. Probably Linux, if they're smart.
But that support is so expensive, and it doesn't provide everything, right? And some of the security patches, when you think of all the security patches that we've seen on some of the other operating systems, boy, it's you really have to have a limited and special use like the ATM network.
My mom used to talk about, pardon me, Gary, my mom used to talk about being penny wise and pound foolish, a British expression. But essentially what it means is that you can pinch those pennies and be very frugal, but in the long run, you're going to pay a price for that, a rather high price if you get hit and they're able to steal your bank accounts or whatever else data that's on there that's important to you. It could be your photos, et cetera. So,
what about security on phones? I mean, remember I mentioned last week also is when this is the first trip I've taken where I haven't lugged my laptop with me. And it's really not lugging. It's very small and light.
Sure.
But I felt confident enough where I could travel for a 2-week period of time and only have my Android smartphone with me. And I was able to do everything I needed to do with that. But what happens? There really haven't been that many viruses on smartphones yet, assume.
This year, I'm seeing a very, very fast uptick.
Are you?
And I've mentioned it a number of times here. There's a free application for iPhones and Androids called Lookout. And if you go to the Google Store or the iTunes Store and just download Lookout, it gives you a number of features. There is an upgraded version that gives you some great things, and there's a corporate version that some very large companies are running around town. But watch out, because mobile viruses, mobile malware this year is going to take off, because hackers go to the path of least resistance.
Yep.
Right. Okay, and it's called Lookout, not Watch Out.
Right.
Lookout, and what was the site then again? Lookout.com?
It's an app you download from the Google or Play Store.
Yeah, I think it is Lookout.com for their
But you would go
website.
Probably to the App Store or to the Google Play Store to find it, right?
Yep.
Correct.
All right. Okay, we got some folks who are starting to call right now, and that's good. You may not have been used to having this available as a resource to you at this time, but here we are this week, and we want you to take advantage of it as quickly as you can. The number is 800-859-0957. That's again 800-859-0957. We'll be back to start taking your calls in just a moment on the Internet Advisor. This is your time. Give us a call. I want to thank Eric Dortch, who's our engineer this week, for being the man behind the glass, as we say here, and keeping everybody on their toes and connecting all of us together. And that's connecting you out there with us through our 800 number, toll-free 800-859-0957. And if you have a question, we would love to be able to take a shot at answering that. It's a unique opportunity for us to be here live with you. Normally, because of the sporting schedules, etc., we have often been preempted on these Saturday evenings. But the good news is that for this little bit of time, we are not. And that allows us to open up this time. I've just decided rather than bring other guests in at this time, that I'd like to give you a chance to ask your questions about computers, printers, phones, whatever it may be. And we got some folks who are starting to call right now, which is exactly what you want to do. The number again is 800-859-0957. And Eric is lining up our first call. We'll get to that in just a moment. Gary, is it 2 weeks from now? We've got a special event coming up for us.
That's right. 2 weeks from now, we're going to celebrate our 20th anniversary, if you can believe that.
Who would have thunk it?
You know, I
just talked to Tom O'Brien, our station manager, this week, and I swear he must not be listening on the weekends, because if they'd had, they'd never left us on for 20 years.
Shh, quiet. We're under the radar.
Anyway, yes, we're going to have a big celebration. We're going to have some special guests, and it ought to be a fun time. We'll have to make sure we get a cake there in the studio.
Speaking of cakes, we got to get something for Mr. Rudell, because he's going to be celebrating his birthday tomorrow. Am I right?
How did you know?
I have it on my calendar. It pops up there.
You know, yeah, when we had paper calendars, you could forget. Now it's just a yearly event and everyone remembers.
Oh, don't be too disheartened by that. Yeah, well, happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
In advance, and we'll have to definitely get a cake around here. All right, let's go to one of our first callers here, Pat in Plymouth. Welcome to the Internet Advisor. How are you doing?
Thank you. Is this Gary and Ed and Eric? And is it Eric's birthday? Eric Rudell? I don't know.
No, it's going to be Ed Rudell's birthday, and that's coming up tomorrow.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, thanks. My problem has to do with having been on Facebook, and I created one group, and then all of a sudden, other groups popped up that I didn't create, but it does say that I created them, and I'm trying to find a commonality to the whole thing, but I'm not having any luck with that. I've had a friend who knows a lot about computers just help one friend get out of the group by using a Facebook way of doing it, and that just by clicking on to the blue dot at the top of a cell phone. Or I guess their laptops. I don't know what it is. But,
But what?
How are you accessing it? Are you showing it through an application on your phone, or are you using a computer?
A phone only.
Your phone only. Because sometimes the application just does not have the screen real estate to be able to accommodate the groups that it's displaying for you. So right now you have one group that you created, and it may have added into their groups that you've subscribed to as well. I'm only speculating on that. So what I would suggest is try to access your Facebook page using a computer, because the web interface accessing Facebook is completely different than using the app Facebook.
Okay, so use a
computer
instead of my phone.
Correct. Yeah. And unfortunately, what happens is that if you attempt to use the web browser on your phone to try to, or on your iPad,
I don't have an iPad.
Well, either way.
All I have is a smartphone, Android smartphone.
Well, for other listeners that are listening, if you attempt to access using the web browser on your smart device and not a PC, Facebook says, I'm sorry, we're not going to let you in. You must download our app. I want to use my web browser. No, we're not going to let you.
Yeah.
So you actually have to use a real computer, a Mac or PC.
That's what
I would recommend. And that might take care of your problem.
Yeah, that does make a lot of sense.
Okay.
And at least that way you get to see a little bit more of what's at stake there.
Yeah, you may find that I attempted to describe, is that it's not only displaying the group that you created, but groups that you've subscribed to, and it's sort of bunched them together. Or you may find that these are recommended groups. I'm not sure, but you may find through the graphical interface on a PC web browser that you might be able to ferret out what the problem is.
Yeah, I have a friend who's a computer geek, I'm going to say, but he was in the first group, and then all of a sudden he started showing up in other ones, and sometimes I think he was deactivating his his Facebook profile and then coming back on and stuff like that.
Oh.
So I thought it was him that started this whole thing. He was able to help one friend who has nothing in common with anybody else.
Pat, I'm going to do something here. I'm going to ask our listeners out there who may have had experiences like this with Facebook to call in as well. We'll take answers as well as questions. And sometimes, people have gone through some of those experiences like you've gone through and end up, with some answers for you, okay? We'll keep on doing that. That's 800-859-0957. Pat, thanks for giving us a call.
And, thank you so very much.
We'll
I'll turn my radio back on now.
Okay. Thank you so much, Pat. We'll see if we can get some answers as well with, from people who have had that kind of experience. Facebook can be terribly fickle at times.
I know? It's hard enough to navigate sometimes through a web browser. The app is almost impossible. Yeah. So that's why I recommend trying that. So.
I'm constantly hearing cries of outrage from my wife, Ginny, who sits behind me with her laptop dealing with Facebook. It did this to me. It did that to me. You know, suddenly things change that she had no idea were going to change. And it's just very disconcerting. Let's go to, we've got Star with us from Findlay, Ohio. Star, welcome to the Internet Advisor. Or Stan, pardon me, Stan.
I like Star.
Yeah. This is Stan.
Gotcha, Stan.
I can hardly hear you, but what I'm wondering is I have two computers running Windows 7 Home. I think it's the expert version, but...
Okay, they're running Windows 7. Right?
Right.
Okay.
I am running Microsoft Office 2010.
And
I am running WordPerfect, whatever ran then.
Okay.
I do have a new version of WordPerfect 8 that I've never installed.
Mm-hmm. Stan, hang on a second. We're coming up to a break in just a second. Here's what I'd like you to do. Some things, a little homework. And we'll come back on the other side of the break, and we'll see if we can help you with this. We need to know what the operating system is that you're using.
Well, he told us Windows 7, but what we really need is, you know, what the problem is.
Precisely what the problem is that you're dealing with there, and maybe a little bit about the computer, you know, how old it is, and how much memory that it has as well. Okay, Stan, it's a little bit of homework for you. And when we come back on the other side of this break, we'll see if we can help you with that, all right? The number again is 800-859-0957. And if you've been having a problem that's just been sticking in there and causing you misery for a while, give us a call. We'll see what we can do to unravel things for you. Again, the number, 800-859-0957. The Internet Advisor is on the air for you. A quick reminder for you, by the way, that a copy of this program, a podcast, which, by the way, we put out consistently throughout the year, every Saturday, whether we're live on WJR, as we are right now, our flagship station here in Detroit, or not, we put out a podcast, and it usually appears by Sunday night or Monday morning on our homepage at internetadvisor.net. You can also subscribe to our podcast through iTunes. You go, you have to use a very careful phrase. It's the Internet Advisor podcast. You got to have those words in there. Otherwise, what happens is you get half of a program. Matter of fact, Kasten was just we're talking about. Yeah, I know. It's really wild. It's a problem that turned up a few years ago that is not going away.
Yeah, we have not been able to resolve it.
We thought we'd be able to
deleting everything and going back in, and we're not sure if we want
exactly.
To
well, let's be clear. The problem is Gary's fault.
No.
It is
Eric's fault.
Must be talking to my wife.
No, Gary's not here, so it's always Gary's fault.
Yeah, it is Eric. Eric Anderson, who set this up originally all those years ago, who now works, at ABC?
Yeah.
And God love him. You know, we call him Eric the Viking because he's like 6'7" and 300 pounds. But he set this up for us and messed it up at the beginning because he had too many thes and spaces in there. But we love Eric.
Anyway, it's the Internet Advisor podcast. If you subscribe to that on iTunes, you will get the podcast. All right, or you can simply go to our homepage, internetadvisor.net, and there's a couple of places there that you can click on and download the entire show. We edit it so it's a little more compact, and please feel free to listen to us every week that way. Though occasionally we do, like right now, we have phone lines available because we're live at 800-859-0957. Now, let's go back to Stan in Findlay, Ohio. And Stan?
Yes.
Let's see if we can summarize your problem and get some help for you.
Okay. Basically, I've got two laptop and a desktop computer.
Okay.
Both rang Windows 7 Home Pro.
Okay.
And what his issue is, he's not having an issue with any of the computers. I talked to him during the commercial break, but what an issue is, he's just worried about at some point in the future, Microsoft's going to stop supporting Windows 7.
Right.
And he's running Office 2010. He has Cool Edit because he likes doing audio editing. And he also has Photoshop. And the thing is, Microsoft Office, Microsoft has not stopped support of Windows 7, nor of Office 2010.
Okay.
And his Adobe Photoshop 7, he can still use it, but he can't do any new things with it. The problem is, Microsoft has gone with, Microsoft Office 360, which is a subscription-based service, and Adobe Photoshop is now a subscription-based service. So when he upgrades in the future and he gets a new computer, he's going to have to purchase Office 360 and pay a monthly subscription fee and the Adobe. And most laptops do not ship with CDs anymore or DVDs.
Right.
So he won't be able to reinstall those legitimate programs that he purchased in the past.
I think I have the original discs for both of those, but I don't know if they'll reinstall.
Well, they may or they may not.
So we don't know. So you're going to have to do a little homework on that.
Yeah. When I bought Office 2010, I was employed at a local industry, and they gave that to us because the industry was using it.
Oh, I got you. I got you. They want everybody on the same page with that. Stan, what I'm gonna do is suggest that you take some of the questions that you have and put them into an email and send them to us at internetadvisor.net.
Right.
If you go to internetadvisor.net, our homepage, there's a Contact Us button in the corner. Click on that and send us an email.
Let me get something up on the computer so I can put that down.
Okay. You don't have to worry about putting it down. We'll put that into the podcast so that you can, listen to that again in the future. It'll help you. Okay?
Okay,
Stan? We appreciate your giving us a call. And again, put that into an email. Send it to us through the homepage at internetadvisor.net. And we'll look for other solutions to that as well. Okay, let's go to Kurt in Berkeley. Kurt, welcome to the Internet Advisor. How can we help you?
Hi, how you guys doing?
Good, good. What's up?
I've got it's an HP Z620 computer. And the issue is that I have is when I fire it up, it boots up, goes to the window, has the Windows Start menu. And then before it goes to login screen, it goes to screen black. And I have a little mouse cursor that I can that appears on there, and I can move it around, but it doesn't let me do anything other than that. And I've tried using Control-Alt-Delete to pull up a task manager. It doesn't work. I've looked online, and some of the recommendations were to hit F8 upon, startup,
and that
doesn't even launch anything.
Well, so, what type of – is it running Windows 10?
It's Windows 7.
Windows 7. Okay, well, that's good. So F8 should work. When you first power it up, if you tap it or even hold the F8 key, you should still be able to come up with the Start menu allows you to go into safe mode. So
yeah, when I do that, it makes like a beeping sound, like a repeated beeping sound, and then the Start menu. I've had it come up with the safe mode window options.
Good.
But the problem is when I hit safe mode, it then goes to the screen black again and has the mouse cursor, except it looks larger.
That's not good. Actually, that's really bad. I don't. Yeah. Well, okay. Let's see. How can I phrase this? Usually Windows Safe Mode is a set of software of the operating system stripped down to the bare bones that allows your computer to boot up regardless of if what's wrong with it. As a matter of fact, Microsoft even stores that into a hidden portion of the Windows, and you're not even reloading the same Windows files anymore. And if you can't get into that, there's something else going on. Might be a failed hard drive or a video card. Is this a laptop or a desktop?
It's a desktop. It's a larger
computer. See the picture now. It's a larger unit. One of the things, this is an HP. Have you tried running the diagnostics on this? So when you power up on an HP, if you tap the F9, Function 9, you'll be presented with a with the Hewlett-Packard startup screen, and one of the options is, I believe, to run diagnostics.
Yeah, right.
So F9. Okay, I'll give that a try.
Okay, and the other thing, there's also F10. So on an HP, if you're at F10, that takes you into the what's known as the BIOS or the setup.
Right.
And I'm not sure if the disk diagnostics may be in there as well. The other thing I would try, because it really sounds like, and I think F11 on a HP, this is because I worked for HP for a number of years, F11 will give you the HP startup, which will allow you to do an emergency recovery, like a factory default recovery.
Okay.
But that usually allows you to, HP, what they'll do is it'll say, we could try to save your data, but you should really back it up yourself. Would you like us to try to save your data? I'm paraphrasing, of course. And then it's going to try to reload the operating system. It'll try to save your data, but you may end up with a factory erase and back to the manufacturer defaults. So that you have to be careful about.
Gotcha.
Do you have access? So I've given you about the F8, 9, 10, 11. Those are those four keys right there. Each one has a different function on an HP. You're lucky that I used to work for HP.
Yeah.
The other thing is, have you got access to another computer?
I do have access to another computer. Yes, I do.
Okay. So another thing you could do with this is we have you can create a bootable USB flash drive with an alternate operating system like Linux.
Okay.
Or like, and I'm trying to think of the name of it, and I don't have it with me because I don't have my other case with me, but it's on our website. Let me bring that up. And what that allows you to do is you could boot up into like a Windows environment from your flash drive and then try to back up your data. So that you'll see your C drive and you can hook up an external drive and you can drag and drop your documents. Does not work with Windows 8 and 10, but it still works with Windows 7 because of what's known, I don't really want to go into the nuts and bolts of it, but in Windows 7, Microsoft still lets you boot off of an external USB flash drive. In Windows 8 and 10, they didn't want you to do that because if you could boot off of a flash drive, then you could steal someone's data, and that's Microsoft doesn't want. You know, if you can get your hands on the computer, then you could steal the data, right?
So
if you can boot off the flash drive, you can compromise it. But if you can hold on the line, I'll try to find the name of that. And during the next commercial, I'll give you the name of the website you can go to, and you can download something that'll let you create a USB flash drive.
Is that the Hirons?
Hirons. H-I-R-E-N-S. Hirons boots USB boot thing. It even lets you create a USB or a bootable CD or DVD.
Been such a long time
since
we've gotten to that. Yes. Hirons, right. Yeah. H-I-R-E-N-S.
Right. And Hirons lets you download an image. Yep. That lets you then be able to get to your data so you can back it up.
It's very, very useful.
And it also comes up with a bunch of utilities so that you can run a check disk.
Yes.
Because what I suspect might be wrong with your computer, because it's partially booting into Windows, is your hard drive's failing. But that's speculation. So if you run their disk check utility, it might be able to
Lots of great utilities on that.
Might actually be able to repair
that. I'm glad
that.
We brought that back around because... there are many people who are listening who have older systems, and we just haven't talked about it a long time since everything's
moved. So go to Hirons. So use Google or Bing and search for Hirons Boot CD.
All right.
I appreciate your help.
All right.
Kurt, thank you so much for your call. Take care. And we'll wrap things up with your question at 800-859-0957. Kasten also has something very interesting to talk about, colds. I want to take this... time to again thank Eric Dortch, who's our engineer and screener as well, for helping us throughout this program. It's kind of like getting back on the bike. We're all learning how to pedal it again. And Gary Baker, good to have you with us from down in Fort Lauderdale as well.
It's always good to join you. It's tough being remote. I really miss seeing you guys every week in the studio, but it's good to hear your voice and continue the program. This is fun.
It has been good. Ed, thank you very much, of course, for being our stalwart here, Eddie Riddell.
Always great.
And a happy birthday to you.
Thank you. I won't tell you how many years.
I won't even try guessing, but I may put one of the birthday cakes up there online at least, so we'll have a virtual piece of cake.
You don't have to guess it. You'll just Google them and it'll
there
be there.
There you go. There you go. And that's Kasten Thomas, who's one of our other guests who's in studio with us as well. Thanks so much. Kasten, by the way, you have done some research on something that is certainly a part of my life, or has been for the last couple of weeks, and that is the flu. It's gradually going away, in my case, after having getting a zip back from my doctor.
Wait, that won't do anything for a flu. It may take care of the side effects.
Well, it's doing it then, because it's helping me, okay. Whatever that was.
Okay.
Stop it. You'll destroy his placebo effect.
Oh, that's cold. That's really cold.
No pun intended.
Yeah, no pun intended. But one of the things that you've been looking at is Google's influenza tracking team, which last year, I think, had a map up and you could follow the spread of the disease, et cetera.
We're getting so old. It was actually a couple years ago. The group disbanded in 2015. A little background. 2008, Google had this great idea, and they created an influenza tracking team.
Right.
And they built a model, and the idea was that they could enhance the information coming from the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, by aligning the search questions people were asking on Google along with that. Well, they had great success for 5 or 6 or 7 years, but in 2013, the model just fell apart. And I won't go into all the technical reasons why. But they predicted that the flu was going to be 2.5 times worse than it actually was in retrospect. So they corrected the model, but again in 2015, they had such problems that they disbanded the group. Google is still producing the data, but other organizations have taken this on. CDC now has that map that Google had. A little bit different version, but you can get a lot of data there. What is fascinating to me, because I'm involved in new technologies, and this and hurricane tracking are just like things that I go gaga over.
Yeah, just candy. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's brain candy for the big data and the analytics and, you know, all of that stuff. But there are a couple of really, you know, in CDC site, if you Google or DuckDuckGo or Bing, one of those other sites for CDC flu tracking or influenza tracking, one of the first choices will be that map. So that's a good place to go.
Okay.
But what fascinates me is that there are companies, venture capital companies, who are coming up with new ways to crowdsource the information. One of them that caught my interest was an organization called the Kinsa Institute, and they have a small smartphone app that crowdsources flu outbreaks. What they do is they track the smart thermometers that they're selling, and they now have an app also for the Apple iWatch. And so they're actually crowdsourcing that information and correlating that with the CDC data.
I knew that data was going to be gathered up by somebody.
Yeah, but you know, there's an even better app, one called Sick Weather. And their
sick weather.
So just go to Android or Google Store or the iTunes Store or Android Store. Sick Weather, all one word.
Okay.
This is what's really amazing. What they're doing is they're going out to social media and tracking that activity and looking at crowdsourcing. And through their app, you're able to give information. But the fascinating thing is that they have a 91% accuracy 15 weeks in advance of the flu outbreak based on the information that they're collecting from their smart thermometers, from their iWatch app, and from what they're doing to go out and farm information on social media. Now, here's why it's so exciting.
Okay.
The reason it's so exciting to me is that if a hospital knows with a greater degree of accuracy how much flu is going to be outbreaking 15 weeks in advance here in Michigan,
right,
they're able to stock their drugs and staff more properly.
Yeah.
And so that saves money. That's a fundamental way of changing healthcare. As we get this data more and more accurate, the drug companies won't have drugs that we pay for in their, you know, their profits because it sat on the shelf for a year, didn't get used, it expires, they can't use it anymore.
Right.
So the fun thing about this and the exciting thing, and I I advise hospitals on mobile apps and the futurist thing from time to time. What we're seeing is this collaboration of the drug companies, the social media organizations, the hospitals, starting to build this information because, you know, my daughter works for Google, but I still don't like giving all my data to Google.
I hear you.
I don't mind giving my data to Beaumont or Crittenden or Henry Ford, or the local hospitals because, to me, there's more of a trust and more of a local impact there. But imagine if through crowdsourcing locally, a hospital would be more in touch with the kinds of outbreaks and the kinds of things that are going on in social media within the local market. They're able to do a better job of building their services and their staffing and their inventory to serve the community here.
It is exciting. I'm also thinking that the watches, the smart watches, I don't have one. I don't think you...
I haven't wore a watch since the day I started working.
Oh, that's rude.
Because it doesn't matter. I'm not going home on time.
Well, I have an analog watch that I've worn, a Timex, forever. And I liked it. But I really would like to get a smartwatch because of the sensors that are now being built into them.
Yep.
If I had the money, I would buy that newest version of the Apple Watch.
Well, doesn't that also monitor your O2 levels?
Well, that's exactly it. And for me, being a cancer patient, there are things that my doctor wants to keep a close watch on. And if he could be able to get data, a significant data on my, the O2 levels and whatever else it may be, that would be really important to have that fed into, for instance, the Providence a hospital system, or it's now called something else. I forget what it is.
The Carmanos?
Ascension.
Oh, Ascension. Yeah.
So, Ed, here's what I'm thinking. I've never crowdfunded before, but when's Foster's birthday?
Hey, there you go. We'll do it. First of all, no, Ed doesn't want one. He's doing just fine without
one. I'm good at regifting, yeah.
There we are. Gary, do you
that
have a smart
come out right.
I'm curious.
No, I live on a boat. Why would you ever have a watch?
You watch for the tides, right?
That's right. Every day is just a vacation here. So
I got it.
I don't need a vacation.
No, you
don't need
it. You also have a quote unquote real job. I'm right.
I do. Yes, and I do have to keep track then. But I haven't worn a watch. I had one. I thought it was really cool. I kept it for about 25 years. My kids were teasing me, why would I ever wear a watch when I have it on my phone? And I took it off. I haven't put it back on.
Oh, that's interesting.
It didn't used to be on the phone, but yeah.
Yeah, I used to get teased about that too, and I tried.
And
I just couldn't make it.
And with men, the watch always gets stuck in your arm hairs. It's just not fun.
Yeah.
It always pinches and pulls. I just don't like it.
My kids always thought it was so 5 minutes ago to have a watch, and I said, but how could you tell without a watch?
I love it.
Gary,
on that great note, you have a wonderful week, and we will see you back here next week for the Internet Advisor. Take care, Gary.
That sounds great. Thank you.
All right, Mr. Gary Baker down in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, on the Shared Adventure. Ed Rudell, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
In studio, Kasten Thomas, thank you for staying with us. And Sheen Chow, thank you very much for sticking around the studio and gracing us with your presence as well. And we're delighted that you could be with us to experience the craziness of this live program. So for the rest of you folks, thank you. Watch our homepage at internetadvisor.net to find out when future programs are going to be on the air. And as always, you'll find our podcast there. Thank you again for listening this weekend.
You've been listening to the Internet Advisor Show, Detroit's longest-running, locally-produced computer show, with Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and our team of experts. For more information about our weekly show, to ask a question of our experts, or find the show notes for this podcast, visit InternetAdvisor.net and look for us on Facebook and Twitter. Don't forget to check the other great podcasts available on this PodcastDetroit.com network. Thank you for listening.